Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm excited to have Ed Corno on today's show. Ed is Chief Technology Leader at IBM and is a passionate advocate for emerging technologies. Ed, thank you so much for being on the show today. I know your crazy, crazy travel schedule right now, so I so appreciate you making time to be with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah.
It's an outstanding opportunity to talk.
Absolutely, and you've got a lot of great things to talk to our audience about, so I want to go in and jump in. Let's just talk a little bit about what growing up was like for you. Can you give us a little bit about your background growing
up? Yeah, I mean, growing up in Midwest, St. Louis, and Kirkwood, which is basically a suburb of St. Louis. And it was fantastic childhood, really. I mean, it was kind of, Kirkwood is more like a It's a Wonderful Life type town, city, very much small town, but close to the main part of St. Louis. And I enjoyed that experience tremendously. A lot of friends, a lot of family, a lot of closeness.
Well, we have a lot to talk about with your career journey. And you have worked for some of the best companies in the world. You have had quite the illustrious career, I would say, starting with Capgemini. And I think that's when I met you a long time ago.
Yes, you did. And Capgemini was a great experience there. I was actually a principal, which is somebody that actually kind of leads emerging technology practice back then. And that's when kind of the internet was just starting. That was in 1992, mm-hmm. actually before the formation of Google and Amazon. So I've been in this field for quite a while and saw so many things occur that's just astonishing how it impacted our society.
Yeah.
And that's really kind of a reason why I'm in technology. I feel like this field really gives that to people across the board.
Technology can actually improve lives, can't it?
It really can.
And we've seen that happen. So you went from there to, I believe, EDS.
Right. Yes, recruited away to EDS, spent 9 years there, and a lot of people don't know what EDS is, and really it's Ross Perot's company. Yeah, he started. He then sold it to GM and then was spun off into a publicly traded company. And Ross, very dynamic person. I didn't know him back then. I mean, but it's still individual, as a human, as a leader, he really knew what he was doing.
He did. He was something. I just remember that the Perot Systems headquarters, isn't it in Irving, I think.
Right, in Texas.
In Texas.
Yeah, Plano is EDS.
Plano. Mm-hmm.
And that company's evolved through the years as well.
Mm-hmm.
Meg Whitman became the CEO and then broke up the company about 4 years ago
mm-hmm.
in different divisions. So,
well, I remember getting to tour that.
Did you really?
A long time ago.
EDS?
I did. And it was like, it was almost like a museum.
there was relics from.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had a nickname at headquarters, that main building there. You'd go up all the way up to, I think it was the 15th floor. We called the God Pod. Because everything was like a museum there.
It was.
The awards he had won through the years, mm-hmm. his service in the Navy. Pretty interesting person, very dynamic, great salesperson. And, you know, yeah. really came about and did some amazing things in technology.
Absolutely. Well, then, I believe, then that's when you moved to HP, correct?
Yes, and that's an interesting little story there in the sense that I pretty much stayed in the same office, just the company name changed
yes.
because we were purchased by HP. And I spent like another 9 years with HP and saw more transformation there. And HP is kind of really the first, I say Silicon Valley company. It kind of started out as a startup about 1940-ish, 1939. And you can go there and actually see the garage where it began.
Is that right?
And get a little tour of it. It's astonishing. And they focused on radio parts. And they got a big contract in the military that kind of launched the company.
You really had some great success there. And I'm trying to remember, was that when you did the transformation of the U.S. postal system?
Yeah, basically, you know, you get assigned different divisions, different accounts, different clients. And my number one client or account was the U.S. Postal Service. And so I was involved in a lot of different aspects of that organization. It's one of the biggest organizations in the country when you take a look at almost 600,000 employees, billions of dollars spent in that organization. And so they always have a need for technology, and they try to be relevant, cutting edge, especially what's going on with Amazon and delivery. They go to 7-day delivery with Amazon, contract out. And you're seeing more and more of that occurring across the board with the Postal Service. Matter of fact, one of the last projects I worked on was in 3D printing. And they were thinking about putting 3D printers in post offices across the country. So you could actually create an object, have it then sent and mailed somewhere.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. Well, that's fascinating. I didn't know that.
Yeah, we did a pilot or two just before I left. I think they're still evaluating, and I really haven't seen it yet in the post offices.
But they do have to start thinking differently.
They really do.
To stay relevant.
Mm-hmm. And they also want to pay their own way, too, within the government. They're kind of quasi-governmental. They're not truly, they don't really have a budget set aside in the government. Money is there to make a difference if there's a shortfall.
Is there anything else about HP that you want to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, HP was exceptional in the sense that I really understood infrastructure through that company. EDS was more agnostic. You can go in and sell or market or provide clients with any kind of technology because we were really there for the manpower and the knowledge. HP had certain product sets, especially Blade servers, which is basically a mini server, mini computer, and that was very popular, and they sold a lot of that. Also, the other side, too, there was a consumer side to HP, which had to do with ink. We called it the black gold because it was just make so much money. The profitability there is astounding. And they also have, you know, laptops, PCs, workstations that are all HP. So that was kind of a separate division that I had a chance to work with.
With more the consumer products.
More consumer products, whereas EDS is not. And then, of course, then my next company I went to work for, IBM, is not consumer-based.
That's right. So go in and talk to us about that journey. Mm-hmm. How did that all come about?
And yeah, it was just I saw a lot of change happening at HP and then reached out to my network and talked to folks. And they basically said, Ed, here's this outstanding opportunity at IBM. And I was fortunate enough to be a part of the company. And there's so much happening there. We're really driving a lot of the emerging technologies and making them even more relevant than ever before.
Well, and I want to talk about that. So you have been a chief technologist at many of these companies that we just mentioned. Talk to us about what is the role of a chief technologist in an organization?
Yeah, and I think people don't really fully understand that role. And if you're in IT, you do to a certain extent. But it's really what I do is strategically look at these different companies and clients that we have under the auspice of an EDS or HP and IBM and see where's your roadmap, where are you going from a technology perspective, and then how are different products and services going to then align to that roadmap and then architect from there exactly how they all fit. And many times companies are so tactical, they're doing day-to-day activities, they don't have either the luxury or the time or opportunity to go out and think strategically about it.
Right.
So I'll go in.
That's what you help them with.
Exactly. That's probably the number one part of what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Is also, in particular with IBM, what's astounding about that company is that we're number one in the world with patents, over 20,000.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
Per year,
for like the last 25 years. We have incredible research people. We have lab services. We have at Cambridge, right outside of MIT, an organization there in research. We have a research group that's actually out of Armonk, New York, with headquarters there at IBM. So we're always looking at cutting-edge ways and emerging technologies that can benefit not only businesses, but human beings as well. That's the passion part that I like about IBM. We're not just thinking about day-to-day profits. We're looking far into the future and how it can help mankind.
I love that. Well, you've got to feel good about that mission.
I definitely do. It's a great mission.
That gets you up in the morning,
doesn't
it?
Really it really does.
I love that. Well, let's talk a little bit about the emerging technology. So you are doing everything from talking about quantum computing to blockchain to AI, machine learning, design thinking, all of these things. Mm-hmm. So a lot of our listening audience, they've heard those words. They're not really sure. What does that mean in layman's terms? And, of course, our IT people will certainly understand it. But can you break down some of those concepts for us so people can really understand what are we talking about when we talk about blockchain?
Yes, I'd be happy to do that. And I'll keep it kind of at a basic level of different technologies because it can get pretty complicated and, a long time of actually explaining it. So let's focus on blockchain first. Okay. What's exciting about blockchain is now that companies can actually relay information to each other in a confidential manner. And they do that using a distributed ledger. And I think everybody's familiar with what a ledger is. Mm-hmm. It's an accounting term, and it's actually an Excel spreadsheet could be a ledger, right? Mm-hmm. But this particular ledger actually is kind of a read-only type ledger. You set it up, they call it digital ledger, and then it's secured by encryption. And that encryption then, which is the state-of-the-art type security we have now, enables that confidentiality to occur. In addition to that, you have what they call a smart contract that overlays it, and that could be code. But first, you have to work within your network of suppliers and vendors to determine what that could be. Once you figure out those requirements, then you build out that smart contract. Mm-hmm. And what that means is everybody agrees within your network what those terms are going to be. So that obviously that's going to have an impact on the legal field when you think about it. Sure. I mean, you still need attorneys in that process, but maybe not as much because companies then agree beforehand, before they set up the distributed ledger, exactly what it's going to be about. Then the last is consensus, which means basically everybody in your network agrees on those terms, which there's really two parts to blockchain. You have that kind of technical part I just described in the architecture. But another area that you have to look at and focus on is that network and the governance piece. And that takes time building that network up. And once you do, then you're able to figure out exactly what's next. And that's basically, in a nutshell, what blockchain is at a high level.
And do you know right now, can you even give a use case, Ed, of maybe a company that's using blockchain? Mm-hmm. And then how are they using it? I mean, is there a company
And we can talk about this one company because it's not really confidential. It's very public out there. It's Walmart. And IBM has a service called Food Trust. And Food Trust was basically brought together because we did pilots 3 or 4 years ago with Walmart. And Walmart was always concerned about produce or meat, spoilage, perishable items, and that could actually, kill people. And romaine, I say about 8 or 9 years ago, had a problem. And there was spinach recently, I believe. And all those different types of perishables can cause illness. And what it does to Walmart, they have to shut down the stores, try to trace it back and find out exactly where the problem is. And that traceability part is also really strong within a blockchain. And we did that recently. We had an issue again with leafy lettuce, and it proved itself out. Instead of taking, say, a month and a half of finding where Listeria might be or some kind of bacteria that could cause illness, we found it within a matter of a week. So it really speeds up
that
process.
So you could just stop it at the root of where it was happening.
And Walmart has roughly, I think it keeps adding partners in the network itself, but they have Nestle Purina involved, they have Golden State Foods, all these other vendors, Chiquita, all these different vendors are involved in that network that makes it really strong and powerful. That's kind of the model you want to go to when you build out a blockchain.
Okay. Well, great. I think that's something everybody can understand.
And one other thing I wanted to add to that is that when you look at blockchain, it's really the underlying architecture for Bitcoin, and a lot of people know what Bitcoin is.
Yes.
And that started back in 2008. And we saw that, researchers saw that this technology had a lot of promise at IBM. And we actually tried it on ourselves about 7 or 8 years ago to prove it out.
Really?
And it was very successful for us.
Oh, good. So we call that eating your own dog
food. That's exactly right. Exactly
so you
right.
did that before you pushed it out. That's good. That's wonderful. Wonderful. Let's go on and take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Ed Corno.
All right. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I just wanted to take a second and tell you about something our team at Technology Partners can do for your business. We have spent over 2 decades partnering with organizations and helping them solve their IT needs from a 360-degree perspective. A huge part of how we solve those needs is by developing custom applications of all shapes and sizes. If your team is looking for software and an out-of-the-box solution just isn't right, it's time to consider how we might be able to help. Go to tpi.co/custom apps and learn more about our awesome capabilities. So, Ed, we're all hearing a lot about artificial intelligence, machine learning, and I know you're doing a lot of speaking on that. So talk to us a little bit about that. What are you seeing out there?
Yeah, from an AI perspective, well, first of all, we got to kind of define it. There's machine learning and AI are the two main definitions. And really, there's a lot of work being done right now in machine learning. And to kind of understand what that is, it's almost like you look at your phone and you type in a couple of digits and up comes a full phone number of the person you wanted to talk to.
Right.
And you click on it. So that's machine learning. Basically, computers, servers, the clouds, learning your preferences and get smarter as time goes on. The other AI is actually more interactive, where you're asking questions like Alexa, et cetera, back and forth on exactly what you're trying to achieve. That's really basic AI. That's really not sophisticated yet, and it's going to take years for us to get to the point where you'll ask it a question, and then it'll not only tell you the answer, but then give you multiple answers and directions and advice. That's kind of the next layer of artificial intelligence.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's the next gen.
And the great thing about IBM and what's happening with that is natural process language. And I'll give you, for instance, on that, typical AI, it's still kind of klutzy in some different companies where you ask, okay, give me some information on John Kennedy. If it's not natural process language, it'll come back saying, John Kennedy's at an airport in New York. No, you wanted to know about the politician, John Kennedy. And IBM's tools and AI allows you to have that kind of flexibility and visibility within a question that might come up.
Okay.
So that's what natural process language is. It's not very static. You see that with Google and other different competitors of ours, where it's almost like a search, but it's a voice-oriented type search.
Mm-hmm.
What we've done is really become more sophisticated and able to really expand upon that AI part of it.
Well, artificial intelligence, I don't know if I ever told you this, but, you know, Greg has a degree in artificial intelligence from Washington University.
No, I didn't
did
know
I,
that.
Did I yeah, tell
no,
you that?
No, you didn't.
Yeah, well, back in the day when we were at McDonnell Douglas, Mac was using AI in their scheduling systems.
Back then?
Back then. And so it's not really new, but I believe that it's crossing more industries now.
It definitely is. And what we're seeing too is, and this is actually out in the field and companies are buying it. It's called robotic process.
Yes.
Robotic automation process.
That's huge.
So RPA really is this astounding type of machine learning that combines what we call like AI, but really it's machine learning.
Mm-hmm.
And then allows you to really do automatic type processing that you normally wouldn't. So say a customer service rep decides that, all right, you must find a certain name or whatever, he just types in a couple of letters, up comes that full name. And what we're seeing is tremendous savings of 30 to 40% versus what the traditional manual way was. So
for
it makes
sure
a huge difference.
Yes.
For
and
companies.
What does it do? I mean, I know a lot of people are so afraid and thinking, oh, robots and AI and machine learning, that's all going to replace humans.
Right.
But it really is not.
No. That's the thing is, and our CEO, and she's fantastic, Jeannie Ramadi, talks about basically we're in control. We're
human
beings.
Are still in control.
Right. And we're just using these tools to assist us in better ways of doing processing like I just talked about, ways to improve efficiencies and productivity, because that's going to really be the value of it. Why else create it? And there's also conjecture like, okay, it's going to become like a Terminator-type scenario.
Right.
And Elon Musk has weighed in on that as well. He's created a company called OpenAI. It's a nonprofit. There's about 10 experts in AI working on it, trying to see how far they can push it and then alert politicians and others in the industry to be very careful with how you're dealing with AI.
Well, you had even told me something that just came out from Mark Cuban. Talk to me a little bit about that on artificial intelligence.
Mark Cuban, you know, Shark Tank, billionaire out of Dallas, owns the Mavericks. Yeah, there you go. He really recently said that if he was going to start a business, it would be an AI. And he thinks it's going to eclipse the internet. That's how impactful it's going to be and how it's going to affect everybody's lives, not only just business, but across the board and what mm-hmm. we do. And it makes a lot of sense. Some of the mundane tasks we have and do and achieve every day in business, in our lives. And you know, you look at GPS, in a way, that's artificial intelligence for the car. And just think of all the gas you save through the years. Who gets lost now?
Right. You don't take 10 trips around the barn anymore. You really just go from point A to point B
exactly right.
because of the GPS. Yeah. And so I think the whole point for people out there that may be afraid right. that this is going to replace the human capital aspect, it is not. It really, as to Ed just said, it's going to really help automate mm-hmm. those mundane tasks so then we can spend our time on more strategic things and higher value add activities.
That's exactly right. And we mm-hmm. believe that at IBM. And you articulated it very well, is that we want people, customers, to go to those more high-value type situations mm-hmm. and not be stuck in those low-value, really commodity-type situations. When you think about your work life, isn't that what you want to do? Why would you want to do mundane, repetitive-type tasks over and over and over again?
Honestly, I think that's going to help people feel even more engaged because yep. they're going to be able to do more challenging work
exactly.
and more interesting work.
Right. They should be happier at what they're doing because they don't right. have to do the mundane.
Right. So let's all get excited.
Yeah, we should. We,
we should all get
yeah.
excited. Something to
we
celebrate.
We definitely should, yeah. And if you want to look at it further and examine it, and I've done this throughout my career, get the Dummies books, believe it or not.
Right. Okay.
It's a nice, basic kind of understanding, easy language that you can really pick up on.
That's a great advice.
And really give you kind of an overview of what it's about. As a matter of fact, Mark Cuban mentioned that on the internet, like article.
Did he?
He has machine learning for dummies that he reads.
Yeah.
And he's right. I mean, I've done it through the years as well.
Sure.
It gives you a really
good
idea.
Well, I'll be going and ordering my copy today.
There you go.
That's great. Well, so we had talked about this, but just quantum computing mm-hmm. is something else that you're exploring and kind of talking a little bit on mm-hmm. right now. But as we've said, there's not a lot of use cases out there. We are talking really not just cutting edge. We're talking bleeding edge. So there's not a lot out there yet. But is there something you want to say about quantum computing and for people to be?
I mean, quantum computing is pretty complex and uses quantum theory, and we're trying to apply that with a computer to find out exactly solutions to real complex issues that have been out there for quite a while. And there are very few actual quantum computers that researchers are working on right now. And so it is really kind of bleeding edge, cutting edge.
Mm-hmm.
So from a business perspective, a lot of applications in the future, especially in chemistry, especially in space, all sorts of different areas that
right.
you can think of.
So be on the lookout.
Yeah, definitely do. And the one thing that's really interesting is several days ago, research groups have been able to take a particle and then go back in time using a quantum computer.
Is that right?
Yes. Now, whether
that's
or not
mind-blowing.
We're going to go back in time or travel, that's a different situation or scenario. But they've taken a particle, one of the smallest things on the planet in existence, and been able to push it back in time and manipulate it using the quantum computer.
You know, what is just so amazing to me, again, and it's back to your point, and this all takes human beings.
It really does.
Takes human beings, but every generation is building on the next, isn't it? And so it's just amazing to think about how far we've come. You know, you talked about the internet. Mm-hmm. The World Wide Web was just invented in 1992 or 1990.
Right, I mean, somewhere around there, yeah.
Look how far we have come. And
it's
just
amazing.
We love technology.
Yes,
I'm glad that you're in it. I'm glad we're in
it,
too.
I'm glad to be in it, that's for sure.
We're in a good place, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, so this is something extra. So I want to talk to you just a little bit about that. Tell us a little bit, like, is something extra maybe in one of your team members? Can you tell us
Yeah,
about
something
that?
Extra. I just love that theme. It's
well, thank
kudos
you.
Kudos to you. I think it's a fantastic way to talk about people, what they're doing from a leadership perspective. And to me, what I've seen is people going above and beyond expectations. That's the something extra. And to give you a little story about that, I had a team I was working with. It has to do with blockchain. It has to do with a marketing coin we were trying to create. And to be able to do that for this Fortune 500 company, we had to do a lot of research and figure out exactly how that would work. We looked at Bitcoin, other coins, and then determined this was the best way to go. I mean, we could have just used our own research and information and presented it to the customer, but we went above that so they could really understand what we could do for them and looked at many different applications and approaches to it. And, of course, they were extremely satisfied with it. And we're going forward with a marketing coin. It's really going to be more of a token that's really going to change their industry.
Wow. That's amazing. That's mind-blowing.
Yeah, it is.
But that team went above and beyond. They went the extra mile.
Way above and beyond, extra mile, to really find out insights into how the blockchain and this particular loyalty coin could work.
I tell you, we have a lot of those people here. I'm really blessed to say. We have a lot of people that go the extra mile, and you just so appreciate those team members, don't you, Ed?
Yes, you definitely
do. They're just, they're gold.
They
really are. You don't want to lose them.
No, you really don't. You want them around for a long time.
That's right. So talk to us a little bit about, have you noticed in somebody that you worked with where there was something extra missing?
Definitely, yes. And occasionally you'll run into it, but a lot of the folks I work with are very professional, and they always give a lot more than expected.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's a situation, what I've seen is more about communication. That's the number one issue, where you make assumptions across the board with customers and information that's not accurate. You know, when people just assume, okay, this is the way it should be, or we've done it like this before with this customer. They're not asking questions. Questions are so critical.
So important, isn't it?
In any kind of leadership situation across the board.
Mm-hmm.
So you really need to focus on that part of it. And then they get familiar with what you're trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
And then that communication is enhanced. But I've seen that with teams before, where they just kind of hunker down. They're not really communicating with each other or even with the customer.
Boy, that's really great advice. Mm-hmm. Even for young people out there, you may not think communication is that important. It is so important.
So important.
The written communication, verbal communication.
And
many times, you know, it really the onus sometimes falls on the communicator, because the person you're communicating to may not really understand.
Yeah,
so you need
is.
To figure out a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, we say sometimes drawing pictures.
Right. No, it's nothing wrong with that.
Drawing pictures and
design
graphics.
Design thinking.
Exactly. It's really important.
It is very important.
To make sure that the person that's listening really understands and everybody's on the same page.
Oh, definitely. And then also you have to try to kind of relate to the level who you're talking to. Because many times, and especially in information technology, you can really get geeked out. The person doesn't really understand what you're saying,
but
it'll go along with what you're saying.
Right. But
so you have to adjust and determine the level of expertise that person you're talking to.
Consider your audience, right?
Always consider the audience.
Yes.
Always.
So talk to me about this. What is the something extra, Ed, that you believe every leader needs?
You know, I've studied this for quite a while, and it's resiliency. The capability to bounce back from negative situations. In all those situations, failure, et cetera, it's more of like a learning experience for you. I really believe that no one fails.
I love that, and I could not agree with you more. It's a learning opportunity.
It is.
It's not a failure.
No, it's not at all. And if you had that kind of perspective and you believe in that deeply, you'll be successful, because you're not going to give up. You'll
Absolutely.
Be persistent. And a part of all that is passion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Steve Jobs said you have to have passion in what you do, because of the fact that you're going to be spending a lot of hours doing it, and you're going to be dedicated to it. And that's your waking hours. That's your life you're giving to whatever you're trying to pursue.
Right. No, you have to have some sort of why.
Right.
What is your why?
What
for
is the why?
What you're doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when you can find that thing that you have a strong why about, that's bigger than yourself, you can be passionate about it, and you're going to bring your whole self then to that situation.
No doubt about it. It
makes
a gigantic difference in what you're doing, and you're going to be successful with it.
Okay, so I do have something that Ed and I are really excited about. We have a Women in Technology event that is going to be hosted here at Technology Partners on April the 18th from 8 to 10. And Ed has graciously agreed to come and bring all of his knowledge about artificial intelligence and machine learning on the panel that day. So, Ed, I'm so grateful that you're able to do that.
Well, thanks a lot for the invitation. And, you know, it's really exciting when you think about it. Women in technology is an area that we really need to expand upon. There's just not enough women in this great industry that we have. And so I really look forward to being with you on that panel and talk about what's happening And especially when you look at what I think is going to be tremendous across the board for our industry.
Well, Ed, this has just been so much fun. I think we could probably sit here for, you know, a couple more hours, you know, sure. talking about these emerging yeah. technologies. But we just so appreciate you being on the show today. And I know our listeners are going to get so much value from the insights that you've shared.
Oh, thanks. It's my pleasure. Thanks for the invitation. I really enjoyed it.
Our show today is executive produced by Brian Muncy. Our technical producer is Daniel Williams. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach out to Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.